Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we are discussing who would be included on the Heat's all-time all-rookie team.
We'll go back in Heat history and look at which players had the best rookie seasons in Miami. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat in the NBA for Fans Cited. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and Fans Cited. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
We've already posted shows for our all-time defensive and all-time offensive teams in Heat history. And today we're going to do our all-rookie team, where we go back and look at the best rookie seasons in Heat history. We'll follow the same format as the all-NBA teams, two guards, two forwards, and a center. And we'll start there with center, David, your all-rookie team center. Should we kind of outline the decision process here? Because we were talking a little bit before we were recording about, look, there's a lot of different ways you can measure a rookie's success, right? You could just do it by raw stats, points per game, rebounds, assists, etc. You can go by overall impact, how much that player impacted the winning of the team, the that player's role in general on the team. There's a lot of kind of things to consider here.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, especially with a team like Miami, for all the success they've had during Pat Riley's tenure, obviously, a lot of that success hasn't been predicated on, you know, on any kind of rookie contributions. For the most part, Riley, a coach, and a general manager that never really relied heavily on rookies. In fact, from all the players that I have on my list, I think none of them started off their rookie seasons coached by Pat Riley. So that's indicative of something. Like, I mean, Pat Riley probably, I mean, for all the for his tenure, from 95 to 2003, up to the year that Dwayne Wade was drafted, I don't know that there was a significant rookie contribution there. A lot of his biggest moves were obviously acquiring players via trade or in free agency. And I think even as general manager now, that's probably continued somewhat. So he's just never been very reliant on rookies. And you're absolutely right as far as all those different factors are concerned. Like, you know, I was breaking down certain players and, you know, they might have had more production from a statistical perspective, but maybe those teams weren't as successful, or maybe they were successful, but a lot of that individual success of the rookie in question may have, you know, been dependent on another superstar player that might have helped make that production more feasible. You know what I'm trying to say here? I don't want to reveal too much. And this position, especially center, I mean, with Miami's great history of superstar centers, it's the weakest one as far as the draft is concerned. Maybe they probably drafted like three players at the center position, only one of which is stands out in any way, shape, or form. So I think for our listeners, if they have any kind of inkling about Heat history, it's pretty clear that the best rookie center in Heat history is Ronnie Cicely.
That's who I had too. It's a runaway. I mean, he checks all the boxes, right? As far as impact, on the team, and then just raw stats. I mean, all the boxes are checked right there. And so, you know, you look at that 88-89 season, the
88-89 season. Miami's first season in the league. And not a particularly good one. Obviously, they started off with a really bad losing streak. They didn't win a whole heck of a lot. It was an expansion draft for those listeners that might not be familiar with it. So this was a team of players that were either rookies kind of figuring out their way in the league. Think about that from a perspective today. Like, it's not the same thing, I think, because you're not drafting a guy who's maybe a one-and-done type player who might be 19 and you're banking on potential. These were guys in their early 20s. And by this point, look at Giannis Antetokounmpo or other players like that that are already in their early 20s but have been, they're potentially MVP candidates and things of that sort. So I think that they're physically a little bit more mature. A guy like Cicely was, you know, obviously a little bit more mature. I have a four-year player at Syracuse, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. And then he was able to, and he started 62 games, started 62 games as a rookie. And that kind of goes to show you, not to say that rookies don't, like one-and-done players don't start in the NBA anymore.
Right.
But it certainly was the case in you know, the late 80s, early 90s and kind of going through there, where these players were a little bit more mature oftentimes coming out, and he was able to average almost 11 points and 7 rebounds a game as a rookie center. And you know, there were you could tell right away with Cykli. I didn't grow up necessarily watching Ronnie Cykli, but I watched a ton of highlights, and you see kind of like, you know, you cover the Heat long enough, you've seen enough YouTube clips and things. He was just a tremendous, he was Miami's first big star, so to speak. He was kind of like the first, not star, but like the guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was their first draft pick. You know, he was, again, a bigger name in college play, playing for Syracuse. And, you know, he came to the team and, you know, for a team that was an expansion team alongside, what was it, the Orlando Magic? No, Orlando came later. Was it the Charlotte Hornets that came at the same year?
I think it was Charlotte.
Yeah, I think it was. And then Minnesota and Orlando came a couple years later. So I think, you know, he was their building block for a team that wasn't expected, again, to compete at any kind of high level. It was the late 80s. You know, you didn't have Chicago's great run of success. They weren't a dynasty at that point. You were kind of on the cusp of the Detroit Pistons winning their championship, but you were still in the throes of either the 76ers being contenders and, of course, the great Larry Bird teams with Boston. So Miami wasn't expected to win. They didn't win. But Cykli at least gave them hope for the future. And interestingly enough, despite his production as a rookie center, the only player on my list anyway not to make an all-rookie team. He was neither a first or a second teamer as a rookie. And it wasn't like it was a distinguished class of rookies either. Not a great rookie class overall. But Cykli didn't even make that cut. So, you know, looking back at Cykli, I did watch him play a little bit. Never really spectacular. Kind of, I think, for all that he was a good rebounder and very good positioning, very smart player and everything else, I think the knock on him was that he was never overtly physical. And I think a lot of that could be attested to the fact that he was playing in an era where you had such dominant centers, like historically dominant players like Shaquille O'Neal, Patrick Ewing, Alonzo Mourning, you know, on and on, David Robinson, et cetera, et cetera. So there were so many great players at the center position. Cykli was clearly in that second, perhaps third tier of centers. You know, I never made an all-star team. I think he might have been able to lead the league in rebounding. But again, you know, a good soft touch around the basket, earned that weird nickname from Dr. Jack Ramsey of the spin doctor, because he did have some nice moves in the low post. But not a spectacular career. And then, of course, he was traded after, I believe, 4 or 5 seasons with Miami. Traded to Golden State in exchange for Billy Owens and a couple other players. I don't even think that was part of the Tim Hardaway trade. It was just an earlier precursor to a trade for Tim Hardaway the next couple seasons. So, you know, not a fantastic tenure, but from a very limited center position class, as far as rookies are concerned, he's the only one that really stood out.
Yeah, I mean, the Heat traded for Alonzo Mourning. They signed Hassan Whiteside. They traded for Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, you talk about the big name centers in Heat history. They weren't drafted, you know. And I think, you know, if Bam Adebayo was a rookie last year, but he barely played. So as talented as Bam Adebayo is, and as much upside as Bam Adebayo has, and he could, there is a good chance Bam Adebayo ends up having a better career or has a higher ceiling on his career than Ronnie Cykli did. But as far as rookie seasons and rookie production goes, he just didn't have any production really to speak of, and Cykli did. I do want to mention before we move on to our forwards, if we just went by win shares, Ronnie Cykli has negative win shares but on Basketball Reference. That's because Miami went 15-67 that year.
Yeah.
But I was trying to measure like overall impact of winning, and basically I was trying to see if I could just do this the easiest possible way before when we were preparing for the show. I'm like, what if I just picked the top 5 rookies in win shares as defined by Basketball Reference? And it actually lays out pretty well. It's Dwayne Wade, Mario Chalmers, Caron Butler, Grant Long, and Udonis Haslem. That's a starting 5. That's by position by win shares. That said, that is not my all-rookie team. There's a lot of different differences on mine. I'm assuming there's some differences on yours, as we already see, with Ronnie Cykli is already the center. But let's move on to forwards next after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, we're naming the Heat's all-time all-rookie team. We've already done center. Let's move on to our forwards, David. So in the same spirit of the all-NBA team, not necessarily a power forward or a small forward, just 2 forwards. I'll start with my first forward here. I've got Caron Butler.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty obvious one. 15.4 points per game as a rookie, drafted the year before Dwayne Wade, right? So before Wade, that was the most productive rookie season to that point in Heat history, as far as just scoring is concerned. So in 15.5 points per game, 5.1 rebounds per game, 2.7 assists, averaged 1.8 steals a game, which is pretty high for a forward. A guy who's not necessarily defending ball handlers all that often, even though Caron Butler did his fair share of that, defending wings. So, you know, Caron Butler's rookie season was an early indication of sort of the productive career that he was going to have. Now, I don't think he ever reached that ceiling that seemed to be there when he was drafted and after that rookie year, which might be a theme with our forwards here. But as far as just that one rookie season, I mean, as productive as you could ask for the Heat in that 2002-2003 season.
Without a doubt. And I think you bring up a really good point, because that year, if you look at the statistics, I think a number of them kind of match up with his overall career averages, like in points per game, etc. So he was just the kind of guy who was brought in there and immediately contributed at a high level, never really reached superstardom as a rookie or at any other point throughout his career, but went on to have a really productive and long NBA career. And I think that's fine. It's like, you know, a lot of fans assume that you're going to draft a player, particularly in the lottery, and said player is going to translate into a superstar, which has always been one of the concerns I've had with a draft, is that you're going to draft role players. And sometimes you get a very good one, and I think that's where Caron fit in. And I think looking over those stats, that was a really bleak period in Miami Heat history. It was in between the Alonzo Mourning era and the Dwayne Wade era. Zoe had obviously already left the team as a free agent. Those last years in Miami were marred with his injury. They never were able to get past the New York Knicks hump. And the team that Pat Riley had put together in 2000-2001 that was supposed to have been built on Alonzo Mourning, around Alonzo Mourning, never quite reached that level of success. So you were kind of trying to fit in with Eddie Jones and Brian Grant. And then you draft Caron a couple of years later. And I'll never forget, one of the moments that really stood out for me with Caron was that NBA draft lottery, where he was drafted 10th overall after having had a really good career at UConn, and then crying as his name was called out, because one, there was a mix of emotions that he had slipped as much as he had in the draft. A lot of people expected him to be a top five player. And then to go to an organization like Miami, where he felt a chance to contribute right away. And he really did. And playing alongside guys like Eddie Jones and Grant, when that team was still trying to find an identity. This is kind of like indicative of what I was talking about as far as like great production. Didn't translate into winning. But, you know, that rest of that team was so haphazardly slapped together. I don't know that anybody expected the 2002-2003 Miami Heat to kind of go into the playoffs or to reach the playoffs or anything like that. So you look at Caron's production, and it really stands out. He did everything they could. They won 25 games regardless. And I think he was just really, really solid as a player and wound up being really solid throughout his career.
Made two All-Star games in Washington when he kind of broke out. He played for the Wizards for, I think, 4 years. Yeah, four seasons. I'm looking at his stats now. And in his age 26 and age 27 seasons, he ended up making the All-Star game, and in two of those seasons, averaged 20 points per game. So there was a point where he literally did become a consecutive All-Star.
A fringe All-Star, right? Not quite superstar level, but still an All-Star, which is great.
Right, exactly. And you know, for the 10th pick in the draft, in his prime, two-time All-Star, averaging 20 points per game, that's not bad. And then, of course, he was always a tremendous rebounder for his position. Yes. He was a little undersized as a forward still. I mean, he was listed at 6'7". Always seemed a little bit smaller than that to me. I don't know. But
shot really well, right, from three-point
range.
He was
a really good shooter, yeah, good perimeter shooter, great locker room presence. You talk to these guys who played with him in Miami and have played with him in other places, and they can't, like, just immediately, we're talking about, you know, as a rookie, he had a great presence in the locker room and almost just felt like a veteran right away. Only played two seasons in Miami and was obviously a big part of that Shaquille O'Neal trade. And the Heat probably would not have been able to pull off that Shaquille O'Neal trade if not for being able to put Caron Butler in the deal.
Right. The potential of Butler, I think, was tantalizing for the Lakers, trying to rebuild around Kobe Bryant and some other players.
And a big part of that was because he had such a good rookie season, which is why he's on this team. Who's your other forward?
You know, it was kind of tricky for me. There are a number of options. I don't know if you want to go into our honorable mention team. You know, with forwards, again, it was kind of difficult because they were pre-Riley for the most part. And I went with Glenn Rice. I mean, maybe a player that I've talked about a lot as far as our all-offense team. So if you haven't heard that podcast, please do so. I really think that he was a spectacular player in his limited time with Miami. And this rookie season doesn't even scratch the surface of the kind of player that he was. He played in 77 games overall, 60 starts, 30 minutes per game. Really high numbers there. Averaged almost 14 points, 4.6 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.9 steals. So, you know, an overall game there. Shot 43.9% overall, which is pretty solid, but only 24.6% on three-point shooting. You know, less than one attempt per game. So that's just indicative of the fact that he wasn't really the player that he became later on, I think. And his rookie season, he still managed to have a really, really good year. Wound up being the second team all-rookie team. And without that three-point shooting, it's just funny that he was able to, you know, score as much as he did without the deadly arsenal. He was shooting a lot of long twos. Obviously, there's no statistical evidence. Basketball Reference doesn't go back that far. But as far as his overall production, really, really high numbers. So you wonder if he was having a hard time adjusting to the three-point line in the NBA. You know, the three-point shot, I don't think wasn't perceived to have as much value at that point in time. I know the knock on Glenn was always that he wasn't particularly aggressive getting to the hoop. I always thought that he had the capacity to do so. He was more confident in his shooting, and that certainly showed throughout the rest of his career, and not in his rookie season. So despite that, I felt the need to include him there because I still think he was really productive. On a second-year Miami Heat team, this was the franchise's second year, and again, not expected to win much, but he came in there, made some high-level contributions, along with some other rookies that I had on my list.
I had Michael Beasley as my forward, and I gave a lot of consideration to Glenn Rice, and you know, as far as just overall productivity, it's definitely there, and overall impact is definitely there in that second season for the Heat. But I went with Michael Beasley just because of, number one, the production was also there for him. I mean, 14 points per game, 5.5 rebounds a game. Shot really well that first year, 47% from the field. So
you know what stood out about Beasley? Sorry, I had to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Really started. He played in 81 games, which is phenomenal out of an 82 game season. 19 starts. He only had 24.8 minutes per game as a coming off the bench. So all his production in really short spurts.
Yep. And kind of there's been a knock against Beasley for sort of being this and this is kind of a bigger picture for Beasley, this sort of like chucker, like Nick Young type kind of guy. And look at go to his Basketball Reference page. There was a couple years there, right before he made his return to Miami, where he kind of fizzled out in Minnesota, had that one strange year in Phoenix. Where he was certainly that. But this is a guy who's shot for the last 3 years over 50% from the floor. Isn't that weird? Like, you never think about Michael Beasley being an efficient scorer.
Yeah.
But he really is. I mean, if you look at his stats and you ignore everything that you know about Michael Beasley, he is an efficient scorer. And he scores from everywhere on the floor now and even as a rookie. And that's why he was drafted number two overall, was because out of Kansas, people were talking about how this guy could shoot from three-point range, he could shoot from the mid-range, he can get to the basket. I mean, he was an all-around scorer in the pure sense of the word, and he showed that, I thought, as a rookie.
Yeah.
And he had two really good years, I thought, for two really good a rookie year and his sophomore year before he had to be jettisoned in order to bring LeBron James back to or to South Beach. But as far as just being a rookie and the flashiness that he showed, the value that he showed, the production in the small amount of minutes that he had for a team that was already had a leading scorer, had a lead man in Dwayne Wade, who was looking for that sort of second banana. Beasley kind of looked and played the part as a rookie, and that's why I had him on my starting five over a guy like Glenn Rice, who was kind of doing it without that Dwayne Wade presence there.
See, it's interesting that you point that out, because that's why I left Beasley off. Like, I feel like Rice was expected to be the quote-unquote man, at least the leader of that team, you know, when he was drafted out of Michigan. And it was a lot harder to do. It's, think about, you know, there's a knock on big numbers on bad teams kind of thing. And you could certainly make that case against Rice. But I think there were heightened expectations for him to come in as a rookie, a guy who had won a championship with the Wolverines, and then to come into the Heat organization when they hadn't won many games that first season in the league. And then to play alongside Cicely, I think you looked at them as the 1-2 punch. And I think he lived up to that role a little bit better. Like Beasley, much like Butler, I think his rookie season is so indicative of the player that he is. A lot of offense in short bursts, but just as bad defense on the other side of that coin. So to me, I think like Beasley's impact was minimal. Like he played well, as far as a scoring and rebounding option is concerned. I know if you're a fan of Beasley's, you're probably going to look at that production and go, he's an automatic, you know, berth. He has an automatic berth as far as all rookie teams are concerned. And he did wind up making the first team all rookie that year.
Right.
But I just think, you know, he wasn't a starter. And I think that was by design because Eric Spoelstra had no faith in what Beasley could do as a defender, and that was pretty justified. You had Sean Marion, who was kind of starting ahead of Beasley and was a much better option, obviously. And the fact that you had Dwayne Wade and Marion to kind of carry the load there so that Beasley's role was much less, much more well-defined, and he filled it. Like, he came in, scored, gave up a bunch of points, sat back down, and that's about it.
Let's move on to the backcourt. Should we recap what we have so far, David? So your team so far.
My team so far has Bronny Cicely at center, and then at forward, Glenn Rice and Caron Butler.
And I have Cicely at center with Michael Beasley and Caron Butler. So very similar so far. I don't think that we're going to change all that much. We're definitely going to have one guard being the same, and that's obviously going to be Dwayne Wade. We should just get that out of the way now.
No, I left him off my list.
Oh,
No, just kidding, just kidding. There's no way in hell that I could have left Dwayne Wade off that list. I mean, fantastic 2003-04 rookie season. Obviously, signs of overall career greatness. I mean, I don't know that you can say anything. Looking back at those statistics, just phenomenal numbers, but even the numbers don't really over... They can't accurately state,
right,
at least my own memories of it. There was the excitement of this incredible rookie coming in there. It was the first year of Stan Van Gundy coaching the team because Pat Riley had stepped down. So, again, a team that was looking for an identity. Alonzo had been moved on already. You've got Van Gundy coaching. You've got this young, promising rookie, Caron Butler. And then all of a sudden, Dwayne Wade comes in there. The Lamar Odom signing, which a lot of people tend to forget. So you didn't know what Wade was going to provide, because I think in that era in particular – you were looking for bigger guards. You know, I think I was at the height of the Penny Hardaway, you know, sensation.
Yeah.
So you're looking at guards that are like 6'6 and above, maybe 6'6 to 6'8.
The Sean Livingstons.
Yes, exactly. And then Wade comes in there listed at 6'4 and not quite at 6'4. And, you know, didn't really have that kind of – and in Marquette, that's fine. In Miami and in the NBA, clearly that wasn't going to be enough. So – there were even games there where he played point guard. He came in off the bench and played point guard. I think, was it Carlos Arroyo who was starting? Or Rafer Alliston? Eddie Jones was the other guard there. And then Wade would come in and kind of spot for either Alliston, Arroyo, or Jones. And it wasn't exactly like it was
Basketball Reference will position the players, will list their positions based on percentage of time played at that position and guarding the other position. The only season where Dwayne Wade is not listed as a shooting guard is his rookie year. He's listed at point guard.
Yeah.
So, and I think you mentioned the flashiness of Dwayne Wade and just the excitement of that rookie year. I mean, averaging 16 points a game, 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds, you could have told me he averaged 30 points a game as a rookie, I would have believed you. I mean, just the amount of excitement that was there. You know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like the ball was always in his hands, and he just seemed to know what to do with it. I mean, yeah, there were times where he played like a rookie, but being able to score 16 points a game and really run the offense at a lot of points during a game is really, really hard for a rookie. And of everybody on this list, I mean, we talked about Caron Butler having a great rookie season, the most productive rookie season in Heat history up until Dwayne Wade came the year after that. Michael Beasley, Glenn Rice, guys like that who just put their scoring abilities on display right away. Nobody had the kind of impact that Dwayne Wade had as a rookie. Nobody had the there was not that you could tell right away that Dwayne Wade was going to be a superstar. You know, picked fifth overall, he was a steal at five, and that was obvious pretty early on in that 2003-2004 loaded rookie class of a season. And I mean, you talk about guys who just burst onto the scene: Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, LeBron James. All these guys that like sort of recently. Dwayne Wade was that. I mean, he as soon as he took that court, within the first few games, you knew that the Heat had something special there. And that to me was what stands out with Dwayne Wade more so than the stats or anything else. Was just, yeah, things were going to change for Miami. Let's move on to our next guard though, because I'm really interested to see if we have the same person here. Who do you have?
I've got Sherman Douglas listed in my other guard position. I think, I use this same kind of rationale when thinking about Glenn Rice. I know, obviously, he was a rookie alongside Rice in the 89-90 season, second year of Miami's franchise history. Not phenomenal numbers, but pretty solid overall. Started 66 out of 81 appearances, played 30.5 minutes per game. He was a first-teamer, all-rookie, alongside Tim Hardaway. So that was a nice little fact that I picked up there. And his numbers were great. 14.3% points, per game. 7.6 assists. Pretty sensational numbers there. Yeah. 1.8 steals. He was, a little burly type, very physical type player. And again, on a bad team, I just looked at those numbers and there was effort, there was consistency. He was supposed to be another building block there, and then he held out the following season, was eventually traded to the Boston Celtics. And, he was kind of on the cusp of reaching all-star teams while he was there. Never quite reached superstardom, and that's fine. But his one rookie season here, really solid production, had a nice floater, some range, not great shooting range, but he was overall pretty solid. He was the floor general, and that's why he had that nickname. He was the general, play off his name of General Sherman, obviously, but still a pretty solid overall. Is that who you had as your guard?
No, because I didn't watch him play, so I didn't want to talk about him.
The game was in its, I mean, the team was in its infancy. Yeah. I sure as hell didn't watch them, even though I was old enough to watch them, but so.
But the stats are there to back it up. Like, the 7-plus assists per game as a rookie is phenomenal. Then again, I don't really know what the NBA was for a rookie point guard in the late 80s. So, and I don't think it was as complicated as it was now. I don't think there was as much competition, right? Because, I mean, the league in the last, I don't know, almost 10 years has just been so loaded with point guards.
Yes.
I've got Mario Chalmers as my other guard there.
He's a phenomenal choice, and I really anguished over that, not just because of how much I like Chalmers, but because of the things that you're saying. Like, the game that he played was so drastically different from the one Douglas did that you wonder, whether or not Chalmers could have gone in and put up twice as much production on that 89-90 Heat team.
And then, I remember that year, that 08-09 year, Chalmers being drafted the same year as Michael Beasley, that same draft, and in the second round, of course, and just sort of famously being Miami's second round prize.
Yeah.
And really the best second round pick in Heat history. We'll see if Josh Richardson Josh Richardson has the potential to become the best second round pick in Heat history, right. But Mario Chalmers is that right now. Him or I can't really think of anybody else.
No, without a doubt. I don't think fans and maybe even the league kind of valued second rounders. I think this was kind of on the cusp of like Gilbert Arenas being a star, but there was no Isaiah Thomas, there was no Draymond Green, Manu Ginobili was just kind of starting off.
Obviously. And you just sort of take a flyer on a guy in the second round, right? Maybe he can contribute off the bench or something. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And then Chalmers comes in there. I remember thinking at some points, hell, there was moments where Chalmers felt like the better rookie than Beasley was, because Beasley, somewhat erratic.
That was Chalmers, a real debate.
Yeah, yeah. Chalmers was always in control, had no problem playing alongside Wade. Held his own, started 82 games as a rookie. I mean, that's got to be a rookie record. I think, Grant Long did it, but Chalmers played 82 games, went to the playoffs with Wade, started 82 games. That's phenomenal.
The unbreakable record, right? That's what he always called it, the unbreakable record. Look, The year before, they had Jason Williams in sort of the twilight of his career, and everything from that championship year was kind of starting to fall away that year with Jason Williams, right?
Right.
And then they also had a guy named Chris Quinn as backup. So there was a need there at point guard. They went out and drafted, and they wanted to get Derrick Rose because that need for point guard was so profound. They thought they were going to get Derrick Rose. They thought they were going to win the lottery. And if they had won the lottery, had the first pick, they would have taken Derrick Rose and paired him next to Dwayne Wade. And I remember Heat fans in South Florida just dreaming of that. What does a Derrick Rose, Dwayne Wade backcourt look like? Of course, they end up getting the second pick, take Michael Beasley with that pick.
Yeah.
And so they pick up the best available point guard in the second round, a guy named Mario Chalmers coming out of Kansas who had hit the game-winning shot, right, in the championships. And so they take a guy like Chalmers.
Over the Memphis Tigers and Derrick Rose.
Over Memphis, yeah, exactly. I mean, and look who had a better career.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, I was looking back at the all-rookie team. Mario made it alongside Beasley. He was a first-teamer. Mario was a second-teamer. But the first-team guards, not too shabby. Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook. So you got a couple league-wide MVPs
right
over Mario as far as the overall rookie team. Not bad. I mean, Chalmers' career... Like, the fact that he's going to be remembered as that punchline, and unfortunately that the sad later stages of his career post an Achilles injury where he's never been, he hasn't returned to the kind of player he was, like, that shouldn't overshadow the fact that he held his own against superstar veterans. Like, you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers this past season and the pressure that all those players had to face, like established veterans, guys that had already gone through the wars with LeBron James and still felt that pressure. And Chalmers just said, screw it, I'm going to take it anyway. And he got yelled at,
yep,
and he was ridiculed publicly for it. But you know what? He held his own, and that's pretty phenomenal. That shows some incredible integrity there.
And it's interesting when you look at that roster. Mario Chalmers and Chris Quinn were the only point guards really on that roster that got any significant playing time. Like, they started Chalmers from day one, and he did enough to keep that starting position. He played great defense. We never talk enough about Mario Chalmers' defense, especially early in his career. Was just sort of this like Patrick Beverley 3-and-D type guy at that spot before those were fashionable, before that's what everybody was looking for. And I think he was able to make an impact early on because of that. But just to kind of go back to that, where the Heat sort of went into that year with Chalmers and Chris Quinn at point guard. Chris Quinn, another, he went undrafted, made the team by playing really well at Summer League, you know, and that was basically it. I mean, this was a team that, despite having Dwayne Wade there, and you know, you could probably get away with not having a point guard, a traditional point guard who is sort of your lead ball handler, right, because you've got a guy like Wade, but to still go into that season without like a real veteran point guard just seems very out of the Miami Heat's character, right?
Yes.
We know that they, and especially they don't want to be relying on unproven guys or certainly a rookie like Chalmers, but they did. And it paid off because Chalmers was one of the only guys to be held over once that team a couple years later converted into the Big Three era. So let's recap our teams really quick before we sign off here. I've got Ronnie Cicely is my center. My forwards are Michael Beasley and Caron Butler, and my guards are Dwayne Wade and Mario Chalmers.
Yeah, and I had Cicely at center. I had Glenn Rice and Caron Butler at forward, alongside Sherman Douglas and Dwayne Wade at guard. So not much difference there, but a couple players. Look, you could have made a case for either one, despite Miami's lack of overall success as far as a team that has relied on draft picks. They've had some really good ones, and guys that have gone on to, you know, as you pointed out with Caron Butler and then, of course, Glenn Rice, guys that went on to become all-stars and of course, an incredible talent in Dwayne Wade. So, you know, they've managed to draft very well despite not really prioritizing the draft as a way of team building.
Two guys that didn't show up, Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson.
Yes, I considered them, you know.
Me too. They were my honorable mentions.
Yeah, Winslow was certainly on there, I think, because he had a really solid... He played a really defined role as a rookie, and he excelled at it. Richardson came on later on in that season after really kind of rebuilding his shot, his rookie season. Mm-hmm. Grant Long was a guy you certainly could have considered. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Edwards, he was another guy that played that first season in Miami, 1988-89, alongside Cicely. He had some really big numbers, too, and wound up showing some kind of real versatile flash there. But, you know, I think ultimately the guys we picked make for a pretty solid all-rookie team.
I agree. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Later in the week, we'll have a team that could possibly beat Golden State, an all-time Heat team to beat the Warriors. Listen for that later in the week. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.